Well, I'm pleased to welcome to the Caregiver Smile Summit 2, Jennifer Fitzpatrick. We're going to be talking about cruising through caregiving, reducing the stress of caring for a loved one. Jennifer is the founder of Generations Health, Inc., a full-service healthcare education organization. She's also a gerontology instructor. Get that out, Anthony, at Johns Hopkins University Certificate on Aging Program. She appears frequently in the media. There's a laundry list that you can read on her bio. She's a member, like me, of the National Speakers Association, though I'm jealous because she is a CSP, a Certified Speaking Professional, and I'm not. And her first book is called Cruising Through Caregiving, Reducing the Stress of Caring for Your Loved One, which helps family caregivers and is also a resource for health professionals. So, Jennifer, welcome to the Caregiver Smile Summit. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
All righty. So, let's just jump in. Why do you recommend caregivers try to remember that they do have a choice about caregiving, even if they feel like they don't?
Well, it's just simple reframing. If you feel that you have to be a caregiver, and a lot of caregivers feel like there's no choice, it's an obligation, maybe it's their marriage vows, it's their mother they've got to give back to. When you feel like it's not a choice, it's not very empowering. So if you feel, and you reframe it that it's a choice I'm making every day, then you take some of your power back. So for example, if you're trying to maybe, say you're trying to lose a few pounds and you're saying to yourself, well, I have to eat a spinach salad every day for lunch, that doesn't feel very empowering. But when you're saying to yourself, I'm choosing to, it makes you feel a little bit more, I've got a choice, I could really have whatever I like, but I'm choosing to have that spinach salad. In terms of a choice, so many people balk at the idea that caregiving is a choice, but as you and I know, Anthony, the world is filled with people who are not stepping up to caregiving. So everybody who is out there, you've got a story of a sister, a brother-in-law, a niece, somebody that's not participating. And you know better than anybody that it is a choice. Senior living communities are filled with folks. Nobody's visiting. So remind yourself that it is a choice.
Yeah, absolutely. And certainly, I just had a friend, you'll appreciate this, being a Philly girl had an Italian mother like I did. And we commiserated, we almost compared the same stories about how our mothers were. But she just passed about a week ago. And so, but he had no assistance from his siblings who made that choice. So yeah, we do have a choice, and God bless the ones who do make the choice to participate.
And I think if you look at it that way, it just makes you feel a little bit more empowered. And it reminds you that whatever you are doing today is more than a lot of people do for their loved ones.
Yeah. And I also tell people it's also, if you look at it the right way, it's an opportunity that you'll never have again.
Right.
So given that some people have choice and choose not to, how do you recruit assistance from friends and family if you are an only child or feel that there's nobody else to help?
This is such a common lament from caregivers. You don't understand, I'm the only one. And I'm sure, Anthony, you hear that all the time also. But there is somebody in your network. So in Cruising Through Caregiving, there's actually an exercise called the MET exercise. And it's an exercise for anybody and everybody who thinks, I'm the only one, there's no one else that can help. And it helps you identify the tasks that really could be outsourced. And then people in your family, friends, neighbor, church, synagogue, temple, network that could be helping you. It's really important to consider, who are you excluding from care? Now, there are certainly people that opt out. There's going to be people that disappoint you all the time. You know, you talked about your friend whose mom passed away and there were siblings that didn't help. That might be true, but I wonder if maybe your friend's mom had friends that wanted to help. So, for example, actually another NSA member recently was telling me a story about when she was flying into the city where her mother was every month or so, her mom's friends would lend her a car so she could get around when she had to take her mom places. That's a way that somebody else can contribute to care. Maybe they're not helping your mom out in the bathroom. Maybe they're not taking your mom to the doctor, but that saved this person money when she was flying in. You know, traveling long distance to be a caregiver is expensive. So what kinds of things are you willing to let people do? And keep in mind, if you are affiliated with a Rotary Club, a church, a temple, synagogue, any kind of community group like that, there are usually people that are retired or maybe only work part-time and they want to give back. And so certainly you have to screen folks and make sure that they're the right fit and everything. But there are people out there, and it's just not true that there's never anybody.
Right, right. Yeah, and as a Rotarian, I could definitely attest to our giving nature. It's interesting when my, so I had an unfortunate situation where my sister predeceased my mother, and you know those statistics. And during, my sister was diagnosed with cancer, and we were obviously in North Carolina, and they were in Florida. And so it was, you know, all right, my brother-in-law now has to take care of my sister. He can't take care of my mother. And what do we do? And luckily, she had a great support network, but we also had we used that tool, Lots of Helping Hands. Yes. Caregivers are not familiar with that. Not to give a plug, there's others as well, but it's a way to set up a community and assign tasks to people. And wow, I'm telling you. And my mother had a lot of needs, and it wasn't just not the medical appointments. It was, you know, they have to have the hairdresser at a certain day and a certain time for the last 65 and a half years, you know, and a whole network just bounded in and helped.
Well, it's interesting that you mentioned the hairdresser. So, for example, if when you do the med exercise, for example, you might say, you know, it's an exercise that helps you identify who cares about you as the caregiver and who cares about your loved one. Well, you might write down mom's hairdresser cares about her. So maybe if mom can't really get out of the house because she's going through treatments, maybe that hairdresser would come to the house to cut her hair. You know, maybe she would, you'd still pay the hairdresser, but it would take some of that chores or errands or tasks and getting her out of the house out of the way. So it's interesting. You can find resources and help. I'm not saying that every single person that you meet is going to be part of your caregiving crew or team, but I bet you there's more people than you expect. And most of us want to help, but in caregiving, we don't know how. My good friend just had a baby, and I threw the baby shower, and everybody started offering, you know, what can I do to help? And I was thinking, well, I'm throwing the baby shower. I don't need any help. But suddenly I realized, you know, I'm not really great with decorations. I'm not very crafty. Somebody offered, you know, what could you use help with? And I thought, well, decorations. Somebody else said, in fact, the shower was in the Philly area, and I don't really know where any good bakeries are anymore. And somebody said, well, do you have a cake? And I realized not just was this taking something off of my plate, but this was a beautiful gift for our friend that's having a baby, because all these people are contributing. If you're the only one that's providing care, you're probably getting sick of your loved one, and they're getting sick of you too. So let other people be part of the process. And, you know, with a baby shower, though, everyone wants to help. It's exciting. It's happy. With caregiving, a lot of times people just don't know what to offer. So be prepared with a list of things that maybe you personally don't have to do.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we also, as caregivers, or as mom or dad are getting older, we jump to certain conclusions that we think might have to happen, I'm going to have to move mom in, or I'm going to have to move with her. And why should they think really hard before they make a drastic move like that?
Well, you know, everybody got along really great with their parents when they were growing up, right? So it really should never be a problem. Well, all those old habits, whatever it was when you were growing up with your parents, if you move back in together, whether you move in with mom or she moves in with you, some of those old things that got on each other's nerves with each other is probably going to surface. It's probably going to resurface. And maybe you and your parent get along beautifully, but they don't get along perfectly with your spouse. You know, no one's ever heard of that. Or maybe you have school-age kids at home that really require your attention. And if you are hands-on, mom lives with you all the time, it might not be that you're able to give your kids the attention, especially for people who have special needs children. So don't jump to the conclusion that that's the only way to do it. And I know you said being part of an Italian family, in a lot of cultures, that's the expectation. But rethink it and say, well, is this really best for everybody in the family unit? Is this best for me, my spouse, my kids? And is this best for mom? And there are lots of options. Moving in for some families works out beautifully. And other families, it's a disaster. And one of the worst things is having somebody move in and then say, not working out. This is my husband can't take it anymore, or the kids don't have enough attention. The other problem that occurs if you move in and it's not the right fit is a lot of times people, let's say the other siblings, they think, well, you've got it. She's at your house now, your problem. And sometimes people start to pull back. Whereas if mom was maybe at assisted living or mom was still at home with some home care aides, people would be pitching in more equally. So just think about it. Some families, it's the right choice, and some families, it's just not the right choice.
Yeah, absolutely. I joke. So when we moved my mom from South Philly, when it was finally her, it was her choice, and she moved in with my sister in Florida, and I joked that we had to separate the combatants because they were going to kill each other. And so my wife and I mean, we were fortunate at the time we had means to do this. So we bought a condo as an investment, and we moved her in. It was only 5 minutes away, but you know, until mom got a little bit sicker and she couldn't drive anymore, she moved. Did wind up moving back, but at the time, it was some one or the other was going to take the other one out. So fully know what that's about.
It's such a common experience too, and I think there's that knee-jerk reaction. This is the best way to be a caregiver. I'm a bad daughter if I don't do this, but there's lots of ways to be a good caregiver.
Yeah, and so we know that most, six out of 10, I believe, are caregivers who are also in the workforce. And of course, the natural tendencies there are, you know, all the implications that come with that, and whether you're going to have to leave or take a leave of absence or leave work. And we do know there's a financial impact on caregivers, particularly female ones, though, of course, you've read the statistics lately about millennials in the workforce. So why should you think hard about those issues as well, and not just say, oh, I'm going to have to quit, or I'm going to take a leave of absence, or I'm going to lose my job anyway?
That's, Anthony, you bring up, it's such an emotional response. Again, like the move-in, people think, well, I really should just take this time to take care of my dad full-time or my husband full-time. And again, for some families, it's the right choice. It makes sense. But I always say, be careful about doing bad math. So say you make, let's say you bring in $3,000 a month, and you're thinking, well, after contributing X amount toward home care, you know what, I'm not really bringing home that much. But you've got to look at your benefits. You've got to look at your leave, how you're able to contribute maybe to a 401k, a 403b. The other issue that I think a lot of people forget, even though work can be a grind, a lot of us get socialization. For people like you and I, we really enjoy our work. It, you know, a lot of caregivers watching might say they love their work. They love their career, maybe considered a vocation, and it's part of their identity. And so if they stop doing work just to caregive, they might really miss it. And even if you're somebody that's watching and saying, oh, I hate my job, think about it. If even if you maybe don't like your job today, if you leave the workforce and try to reenter maybe in a year or two, if even if you were going to change jobs or try to get a different job, would you come in at the same rate of pay? What would you do to deal with that issue? So it's just something, run the numbers, talk to your financial professional. And the other part of it is, you know, young parents stay home a lot with their small children, babies. And we see that happen. And young families have to think really hard if they want to one person to not work. But we have to remember that the child is going to grow and they're going to go to school. And eventually there's going to be more free time. Your role as a caregiver is ultimately going to end at some point. Your loved one most of the time is going to pass away. And then if you've made your entire identity caregiving, what do you have left? So again, just think about it. Maybe it's the right thing for you and your family. Maybe it's not. Just to give you an example, maybe if you're thinking about trying to do caregiving full time, use your family medical leave and take 2 weeks and see what it's like to do it full time. Try it. Don't just quit or go on a long, long period of leave of absence. Try it and see if it might be the right fit, because you might find after a couple of weeks of doing it full time, it's not quite right.
Yeah. Yeah. And there is, you know, there could come with that some resentment as well. And as we age, as the boomers are taking care of even older folks, I mean, it's clear there's ageism in the workforce, whether, you know, you want to say it or not, it exists. And it is going to be much harder to leave and to come back and get a job. So people need to keep that in mind as well. What are some boundaries and non-negotiables in caregiving, and how do you set them, and why are they so important?
Well, I believe that we should have boundaries in every relationship. every relationship, whether it's work, whether it's spouses, whether it's family. But with, when you're taking care of someone that you love, and I'm just going to give you an example. When my family was taking care of my grandma, there were about 11 of us providing care, and we were taking turns. And my dad finally got to the point that he said, I am not sleeping on her couch anymore. I can't do it anymore. And we said, you don't have to. We respected it because he really needed to get a good night's sleep in his own house. And so there were other things. Like when we all started to share the cost for home care, we all set boundaries on how much money we could afford every month to contribute. And we respected it. We respected each other. And I think some people, money, it's going to be an easier thing to contribute toward caregiving. For others, it's going to be time. For still others, maybe they're going to be more on the periphery. Maybe they'll do grocery shopping or they'll run errands. But for example, if you move someone into your home, like if you do decide that that's the correct way that you want to be a caregiver, mom moves in, maybe you put up the boundary and say, one weekend a month, I'm leaving my house and someone else has to be here. So we have to have those non-negotiables so we can maintain our sanity.
Because
caregiving, for a long time, you know that they used to throw out all this data that if you're a caregiver, you're going to die prematurely and you're going to get sick and all these awful things will happen. But what we've found more recently is that's not true. But if you don't get help, if you do everything, if you don't take breaks, that's when you start to face those really serious repercussions. So you want to figure out what are your boundaries, what are your non-negotiables.
And you do have to take care of yourself. There's no doubt about it. Make time for yourself and have fun. And again, you know, some of this is, if you look at it as an opportunity to get to know your loved one better. I mean, for example, I'm working with some folks and we have something called Cherished Memories that helps people document their life story. And the gentleman who kind of co-founded the company said when he actually used the tool with his father, he didn't realize how much he didn't know about his own father. And so these are opportunities, if you think about them in the moment, to learn something and to share a special moment that you won't have again. So, and obviously all these wonderful things that you're talking about are important too, to consider. And you just need to do it with a rational, sane mind and not jump into, you know, emotional decisions that could, you know, cause hurt and resentment.
We want to consider everybody that's part of the team, or I call it in cruising through caregiving, the caregiving crew. Everybody's important. So when I was given the example about my family with my grandma, all my aunts were important. My dad was important. My cousins, my siblings, all of us have jobs and lives and financial situations that we have to be mindful of. And we want, you know, I remember some of my aunts started having, like one of them started having arthritis flare-ups. And we have to take a step back and say, yes, the person that we're caring for, in that case, my grandmother, she's very important. But she's not the only person in this situation. Everybody is important, and we have to be mindful of that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Jennifer, I've been tracking you on Facebook and some of your book stops and all that, and it's a wonderful opportunity to get to meet you, and I hope we have a chance to talk further in the future, but I just wanted to thank you for participating.
Thank you so much, Anthony.
In the Caregiver Smile Summit, so thanks.